Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is February the 11th, 2023, or it's 8 or 21, 2026. A thing here from called the Tabernacle of David. It's some information printed off the computer. It has some very, very good messages here that we need to know. Okay. Tabernacle of David, it says, in that day, in the latter days, will I raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old. Now, you'll find that there in the prophecy of Amos 9, more notably, and Hosea. Some background is necessary for the understanding of what the Tabernacle of David was and what it will be again. It means that this is going to be a place for Yahweh's holy presence. It says Yahweh's holy presence here. Actually, his son is going to be the ruler in this kingdom, along with his co-ruler, Antipater David. And because Yahshua is going to make the Son, is going to recover the remnant of his people in these last days, and he's going to be the one that joins the two great nations of ancient Israel together. That's the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes of Judah. Judah's going to be made the lawgiver. Yahshua's going to sit upon the throne of David and his kingdom, and his people are going to reign in it forever. So it says Yahshua's holy presence. In the beginning, Adam and Eve were with the Yahweh in the Garden of Eden. Their fellowship with him and their access into his presence was unhindered. After Adam and Eve sinned, Yahweh put them out of the garden, Genesis 2 and 3. Man could no longer enjoy Yahweh's presence. Man could no longer walk in the holiness of the Yahweh. Fellowship with the Yahweh had been broken. To walk in the Yahweh's presence, fellowship with Yahweh needed to be restored. So it had to be restored. Now it says the Holy of Holies. After some time, Yahweh instructed Moses for the building of a tabernacle. Within the tabernacle, there was a special place called the Holy of Holies. Yahweh told Moses to build the Ark of His Covenant with the Mercy Seat, the Tabernacle of Moses. For the Ark was placed in the Holy of Holies, and Yahweh's presence rested on the Ark. Exodus 35:39. For the Yahweh prescribed that the high priest was to enter the Holy of Holies once a year on the Day of the Atonement for the making of a sacrifice for the atonement of the Israel's sin. Leviticus 16, especially verse 34. This was the only time during the year that anyone could come to the ark. what has changed from the Yahweh's original purpose in the Garden of Eden. During one of his wars with the Philistines, Israel took the ark into the battle with them in the hopes of having better success. For the Philistines captured the ark, but the Yahweh punished them so severely that they returned the ark unto Israel after 7 months. It finally came to rest in the Jerim, in the house of Abinadab. There it rested for 20 years, 20 whole long years. 1 Samuel 4:7. During this time, the Holy of Holies and the Tabernacle of Moses was empty. Now we come to the Tabernacle of David. When David became king over all Israel, he captured Jerusalem and determined to make the ark there, to bring the ark there. He determined to bring the ark to Jerusalem. David did not use the priesthood method of the transport. And Yahweh killed Uzzah for the touching of the ark. For the ark was placed in the house of the Obed-Edom and remained there. Let's start all over with this Tabernacle of David. When David became king over all Israel, he kept Jerusalem and determined to bring. David did not use the prescribed method of the transportation. And Yahweh killed Uzzah for the touching of the ark. For the ark was placed in the house of the Obed-Edom, and remained there for the 3 months. During that time, David found the proper way for the transporting of the ark. With much praise, worship, and sacrifices, he brought the ark unto Jerusalem. According unto the law of the Moses, David should have returned the ark to the Holy of Holies and the Tabernacle of Moses that was on Mount Gilboa. But he did not. Rather, he made another tabernacle on Mount Zion and placed the ark in it. 1 Chronicles 13:16. This came to be known as the Tabernacle of David. David appointed singers and musicians for their worshiping and prophecy with the instruments before the ark. He appointed enough so that they were there in the presence of Yahweh, worshiping and prophesying 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, for all the time that David was king. 1 Chronicles 25 sets forth details of the prophetic worship and the David's tabernacle. Some of the sons of Asaph, Heman, and Jeduthun were set apart for the ministry of the prophesying, accompanied by the harps, lyres, and cymbals. These men were under the supervision of their father for the music of the temple of the Yeshua, and with the king's David's authority. There were 24 groups of the 12 musicians, a total of 288 who were set apart for the providing of the prophetic worship, thanks, and praise unto the Yahweh. Each group had its own hour every day for 30 years. All were in the service, both the gifted and the beginner. During this time, there did not appear to have been any restrictions on anyone's visiting the Tabernacle of David. for the Yahweh's presence is freely available there unto all who wish to come. As it was in the Garden of Eden, David had the revelation that the praise and worship attracted the presence of the Yahweh. Psalms 22:3. So he made sure that there was constant praise and worship. For it was also in this atmosphere that David received many of the psalms that were recorded. For the ark moved unto the Solomon's temple. Sad to say, this free access to the presence of Yahweh lasted just a short time. For the David's son Solomon built the first temple in Jerusalem and moved the ark to the Holy of Holies there. Once again, the presence of Yahweh was only accessible by the one man once a year. In Amos 9:11 we read, in that day, in the latter days, will I raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof. And I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old. This is again mentioned in Acts 15:16-17, to include the Gentiles who have turned unto Yahweh also, while this undoubtedly refers unto the restoration of the Israel in the last days. It is believed that it also refers to the restoration of the Davidic prophetic worship in the last days, singing and playing instruments according unto the instruction of the Yasser. Over the centuries, Yahweh has led men to establish 24-hour worship and intercession. For example, in 555, Comgall instituted a 24-hour worship at Bangor, Ireland. It continued for 250 years and resulted in one of the most successful missionary thrusts in church history. Also in 1727, a continual prayer meeting began among the Moravians at Herrnhut that would last for over 100 years. They believe that even as the fire on the altar of the temple never ceased to burn, so also should the prayers of the saints continually rise unto the Yahweh as a sweet savor. For the undergirding of this prayer meeting instilled in the Moravians a fervent zeal for the sin of the gospel taken unto the ends of the earth, and they sent many unto the mission field. Restoration of the Tabernacle of David. This is our last subtitle. Reading in this article. Now, in these last days, according to the word of Yahweh, the tabernacle of David is going to be restored. And it was in the David's time, once again, Yahweh's people will have free access unto his presence wherever the people of Yahweh gathered to minister unto Yahweh in worship and praise. He will be pleased to come in his mighty presence and meet with them. For we have learned that just to be in his presence brings healing, deliverance, and salvation. When he comes in manifest presence, we receive from him easily. I also believe that there will He places all over the earth, like Bangor and Herrnhut in the times past, where the tabernacles of the David will be lifting up worship unto Yahweh 24 hours a day, every day. It will be such that Yahweh's people, no matter where they live, will have the convenient access unto such a place. they will be able to go and be refreshed in His presence. In fact, we are already hearing of such places in many cities. Amen. May it be so. Oh, yes, sir. Click here to go back to the main Roar page. Now, let's go to our main study now, taken from One Time to Greetings, number 29. It's called A Trodden Down Kingdom, Rising to Prominence and Peace. Seven women take a hold of the one man. That says, text for the prayer, I shall read from the Mount of Blessing, page 187 by Ellen G. White. It says, for the Yeshua specifies no conditions except that you hunger for His mercy, desire His counsel, and long for His love. Asking makes it manifest that you realize your necessity, and if you ask in the faith, you will receive. When you ask for the blessings you need, that you may perfect a character after Yeshua's likeness. For the Yeshua assures you that you are asking according unto a promise that will be verified, that you feel and know you are a sinner, a sufficient ground for the asking for His mercy and compassion. For the condition upon which you may come unto the Father is not that you shall be holy, but that you desire Him to cleanse you from all sin. Well, this is Yeshua, that by His blood is how He cleanses you from all of His sin, and purify you from all iniquity. For the argument that we may plead now and ever is our great need, our utterly helpless state, that makes Him and His redeeming power a necessity. How reassuring for us, the sinful human beings, ought this three times repeated promise B. For the Yeshua lays down no complicated and hard to meet condition. He merely says, ask by the asking for the blessings we need in the order for the perfecting of our characters in the Yeshua. We manifest our desire for His counsel and His help. We thereby demonstrate that we actually realize our helplessness. Without Him, when we do this, then we need have no fear that the Yeshua will fail us. Indeed not, for He is the person of His word. In view of this, what shall be our prayer this afternoon? Simply that let's do that again. In the view of this, what shall be our prayer this afternoon? Simply that we may realize our needs, that we may desire to be cleansed from all sin, and that we may in the faith ask, knowing for certainty that we shall receive a trodden down kingdom, arise to prominence and peace. How about February 22nd, 1947, by V.T. Hollis. We are now to study the book of Isaiah, beginning with the first chapter and continuing on into the second chapter. For the first part of chapter 1, you will know, deals with the sins of the ancient Israel, while the latter part of the chapter, along with the second chapter, deals with the reestablishment of the kingdom in the latter day. Specifically, it is this latter subject that we are to study today. For the prophet Isaiah has been instructed for the recording to befall the people of the Yahweh in the early days, as well as in the latter days of their history, quickly unfolds the fact that the Yahshua at the same time had in the mind not only his people in the ancient time, but also his people in our time. This same dual view process on the subject you will detect throughout the Bible. In this connection, we should raise the question, is our record as a people better or worse than that of the Jews? This can be readily settled by the reading, Testimony, Volume 3, page 252 and 3, we shall read right now. For the message to the Church of the Latter Sin is a startling denunciation and is applicable unto the people of Yahweh at the present time. And unto the angel of the Church of the Latter Sins write, these saints are said to Amen, the faithful and true witness. The beginning of the creation of Yahweh, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with the goods, and have the need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched, and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. Now, Vitihalas didn't explain that this angel is one single person that has the office of inspiration as a prophet for to bring in present truth to the house of Israel on a daily basis, not just on the Sabbath, but on a daily basis. And Brother Johnson was the last angel placed in charge of that candlestick of Revelation 3:14-17 of Laodicea at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas. He was given charge over that for 33 and a half years. He wrote that in his own handwriting. So when V.G. Hollis quoted this, he says, and unto the angel, Verlis W. Johnson, of the Mount Gilead at the Kermit, Texas, 1970-2003, of the Latter Sin. Right. Apparently that church at the Gilead Center that Verlis Johnson presided over, called Gilead Center, for 33 and a half years, was the last feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventists, because they had the same name. They came on the scene in 1844 with the title Laodicea, with Ellen G. White leading it, 1844. And Brother Johnson was the last prophet placed over that candlestick of Laodicea, and that was from 1970-2003. So the name never changed. For all that time, about 158 years, that name never changed from Laodicea until Brother Johnson gave it up in 2002-2003 at Kermit unto the house of David. Thou shalt come down from heaven, and he took it away from him. And he closed up the breaches of David, fulfilling Amos 9. So it says, and unto the angel Brother Steve Johnson of the Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, 2002, of the Latter Sins write, these saints saith the Amen. As the faithful and true witness, that's Yahshua, he says that he places his angel in charge of the candlestick, the sanctuary service of the house of Israel, and whoever that person is, he's also have the title as a true witness, because he's witnessing heaven's present truth every day unto his congregation. So Brother Johnson, he also had the title of true witness, the beginning of the creation of Yahweh. So Yahshua is this true witness here mentioned. That's in Revelation 1:5 and Revelation 3:14. He's the beginning of the creation of his Father, Yahweh. I know thy works, he says unto Brother W. Johnson, the angel of the candlestick at Gilead Center, 2002. He says, I know him because I have watched you perform for the last 32 years here. He said, I know your works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I've already got it recorded. The angels has already recorded for 32 years, brothers, that you're neither cold or hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. So in Passover 2002, Yahshua came down, and that's what he addressed Brother W. Johnson with. So he says, if you don't repent and anoint yourself with this special eyeshadow, then he says, I will spew you out of my mouth. And so Yahweh gave Brother Johnson 1 year, from Passover 2002-2003, to repent and anoint himself with the eyeshadow and accept this message from heaven that was given to him, on July the 14th, 2002. Because thou sayest, I am, because you, Brother Johnson, sayest, I am rich and increased with the goods and have need of the nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. You don't even know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind and naked. You don't even know it. For the Yahshua here shows us that the message to be born unto his people by the ministers, in this case, it's one minister at a time. When you have an angel over the candlestick, he's addressing him first and foremost, not his under-shepherds, whom he has called to warn the people. It's not a peace and safety message. Whenever I give that message to Brother W. Johnson in 2002, it was not a peace and safety message, because they had inquired of me to give my opinion on why they were losing all their blessings, starting with their son that died. And it is not merely theoretical, but practical in every particular, where the people of Yahweh are represented in the message unto the later sins as in a position of eternal security. They are at ease, believing themselves to be in an exalted condition of the purified attainment, because thou sayest, I am rich. That's because Brother Johnson said, he said, I'm rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing from Yahshua or anything from heaven. I knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable, poor, blind, and naked. What greater deception can come upon the human mind than a confidence that they are right when they are all wrong? For the message of the true witness, now this true witness is Yahshua, Revelation 1:5, and Revelation 3:14. The people of the Yahweh in a sad deception, yet honest in that deception, they know not that their condition is deplorable. In the sight of Yahweh, while those addressed are flattering themselves that they are in an exalted spiritual condition, the message of the true witness, Yahshua, breaks their security by the startling denunciation of the true condition of the spiritual blindness, poverty, and wretchedness. For the cutting testimony is so severe, cannot be a mistake, for it is the true witness, Yahshua, who speaks. and his testimony must be correct. It is difficult for those who feel secure in their own attainments and who believe themselves to be rich in the spiritual knowledge for the receiving of the message which declares that they are deceived and in the need of every spiritual grace, for the unsanctified heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. I was shown that many are fettering themselves that they are good Christians. I'll use that word here. Who have not a ray of light from the Yeshua. They have not a living experience for themselves and the divine life. They need a deep and thorough work of the self-abasement before the Yahweh, before they will feel their true need of the earnest persevering effort for the securing of the precious graces of the Spirit. Testimony, Volume 3, 252-253. I need not read more. Inspiration plainly states that today there is to be a message born unto the people of Yahweh, that message is to be born not by the ordinary men, but by the ministers called especially for that purpose, and that it is not a message of the peace and safety, as the ministry in the general would naturally have it, for the author endeavors for the impression us with the fact that the people of Yahweh are deceived in the imagining that they are in an excellent condition. Yea, Yahweh's people at this time are every bit as deceived as were the Jews in the days of the Yahshua's first advent. In fact, they are perhaps even worse, for they have had the types and the example of the past as well as the added light shining on their pathway that the ancient did not have. For the prophet Isaiah had the sad news for the Yahweh's people in his day. He told them that if they continued in their erroneous ways, all of them, good and bad alike, would be dispersed and assimilated by the nation. For the faithful of today, he has the good news. In Isaiah 1:24-26, therefore saith the Yahshua of the host, as the mighty one of Israel, I will ease me of mine adversaries and avenge me of mine enemies, and I will turn my hand upon thee and purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy sin. And I will restore thy judges as at the first, and thy counselors as at the beginning. Hesper, thou shalt be called the city of righteousness, a faithful city, rather than let all of the people suffer the consequences of the sin. Yahshua at this time promises for the avenging only of his enemies, his adversaries that are within his church, that he will purge and purify his church, and then restore his judges, and that would be the 144,000 in the form of the 144,000, and counselors is at the first. Then she will indeed be called the city of the righteousness, the faithful city. Behold, the days come, saith the Yahshua, that I will sow in the house of the Israel and in the house of the Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of the beast. And it shall come to pass that, like as I have watched over them for the plucking up and for the breaking down and for the throwing down and for the destroying and for the afflicting. Does that word afflict? So will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith the Yahshua. So now we're the ones that's going to put our hands to the task of rebuilding and planting, and we have an opportunity to prove ourselves on this property that we're on right now. We're renting on farmland, saith the Yahshua. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten their sour grapes, and the children's teeth that sit on the edge. But everyone shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on the edge. Jeremiah 31:27-30. Isaiah 1:27-28. For the Zion shall be redeemed with the judgment, and her converse with righteousness. And the destruction of the transgressors and of the sinners shall be together. And they that forsake the Yahshua shall be consumed. So you better get busy and start worshiping and following the Yahshua and everything that he gives you to do. Especially where it says in John 15:10, Yahshua tells the disciples, if you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I've kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. So Yahshua has the commandments in the sanctuary where his blood is applied today. He's there applying it on a daily basis, especially on the Day of Atonement. In Hebrews 12:18-24, and these verses, distinction is made between the transgressors and the sinners. No doubt, the sinners are those who continually live in sin, while the transgressors must be those who sin only occasionally. Nevertheless, their end shall be the same. Both the habitual and the occasional sinners shall be destroyed together. Isaiah 1:29-31, for they shall be ashamed of the oaks, the great and the popular men, which have desired and which ye have desired, and you shall be confounded for their gardens that you have chosen. For you shall be as an oak whose leaf fadeth, and as a garden that hath no water. And the strong shall be as a tow, and the maker of it as a spark, and they shall both burn together, and none shall quench them. This is just what the wicked may rightly expect. It is the best Yahweh can give them, for they do not make it possible to have something better. Now we shall go on and do the second chapter of the Isaiah's prophecy, for it is a continuation of the first. Since verse 1 is but an introduction unto what the prophet is to say, I shall omit reading it, and begin with Isaiah 2:2. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Yahshua's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. Out of the ruins of both Judah and Israel is to emerge a king, a kingdom, and a people, which shall be exalted above the nations. For the prophet Daniel 2 plainly declares, in the days of these kings it shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Daniel 2:44. Note that the kingdom which the Daniel is speaking of is to be set in the days of these kings, not after their days. Moreover, note that it is this kingdom, the church purified, that breaks the great image. Under this coming kingdom, the church cleansed, purified, shall the gathering of the people be. Genesis 49:10. When the headquarters of the gospel are thus established, then it becomes certain that the work is to be finished without the delay. For the gospel of the Yahshua is then to reap an abundant harvest, and the converted multitudes, rather than beat their plowshares and pruning hooks into the instruments for to kill human beings, shall instead beat their spears and swords into the farm implements, rather than work to kill. They shall learn to, they shall farm to feed. Okay, so that's why we're on this land out here. We got some acres of land out here, about 6 acres, that we're tested on, that we can use to grow food on. We got the seed to do it with. For the prophecies are simple and logical, instructive and enlightening. Certainly Yahweh cannot save the world by a lost church, for the very thought will appear unreasonable if we ask ourselves these questions. How can he possibly, by his church, lead the world out from his sins while sin is flourishing in the midst of his church? How can he lead the world into all the truth while those whom he is using to teach advancing truth, till he comes, imagine that they are rich and increased in the need, and in the need of nothing more than when in the fact they are in the need of everything, even blind and naked and themselves about to be spewed out. How can he say unto his people that are in the Babylon, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plague? If he is to bring them into a church wherein sin is practiced, in view of the fact that the church with the sin and sinners in her midst is just vulnerable unto the plagues as is Babylon, so how much worse off would his people be if they were left in Babylon? For the answer unto all these questions is simply this. There must be an awakening for the spiritual poverty and of the spiritual poverty and earnestness into the searching of the truth. For there must be a stop unto sin. There must be a sinless place and people, an ark of safety, so to speak, if we are ever to be saved from the plagues. For the Achans, too, must be put away before the Israel can triumph and take the land. For Gilead's center turning to be a whole church of Achans. That's from Texas. That's the reason why they all came to an end like they did. They were Achanites. For the Yahweh in his wisdom knows that it is better for the destroying of the comparatively few enemies of the truth than for the losing of the whole world. For all the stumbling blocks must be removed. Now that's a good word, the stumbling blocks, two words. I think in Volume 3 of the Testimonies, page 333, Sister White talks about Every stumbling block must be removed so that he can have a pure and holy people to declare his statutes and judgments here in the last day. Then the church will have a second Pentecost. That will be when we'll have our second Pentecost, when Yahweh purified his house of Israel under his purified king. And Yahshua is the King of Kings, presiding over this purified congregation of his, of David. Then every congregation member will be filled with the Spirit. And that's in Joel chapter 2, 23-28. And it shall come to pass afterwards, after the latter rain, that I will pour out my Spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. For the latter rain is brought by the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists. The former rain is brought by Ellen G. White from 1844 to 1888, 1890. That's when the former rain fell. The latter rain started falling when Vitti Hoff took the reins in 1930, and the Adventists named him the Shepherd Rod, so he started publishing the latter rain of truth, and he put the former rain with it. So he published the former and the latter rain, beat the other did. Okay, it says, let us now solemnly and diligently heed the Yahshua's plea unto his people at this very time. Isaiah 2:5. O house of the Jacob, come ye, and let us walk in the light of the Yahshua. Very obviously, this verse implies that hitherto for Yahweh's people have been walking in the light of man. Isaiah 2:6. Therefore thou hast forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east, and arch soothsayers like the Philistines, and they please themselves in the children of strangers. For the people as an organization are forsaken of him, but as the individuals who come to walk in his light for the following him in the truth and righteousness are a re-accepted when the present controversy over the message of the hour is ended, then those who survive the purifying process, that is the judgment, and the judgment of the living the time, and that's here in the 12th parabolic hour when the judgment of the living opened up at the half-hour silence, and that was in 2002 when the half-hour silence opened up. You started the investigative judgment for the living from 1844 to 2002. You had the investigative judgment for the dead. That's a long time, about 158 years. In the house of the Yahweh, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, 1 Peter 4:17, for the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, will be the inhabitants of Zion and of Jerusalem. Okay, that would be in the kingdom of David. Judah, the two tribes, lawgiver. And it says there in Genesis 49:10, the prophecy says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Isaiah 2:7. Their land also is full of the silver and gold, neither is there any of their treasures. Their land is also full of the horses, neither is there any end of their chariots. So right here in Texas, where this prophecy is unfolding, being fulfilled unto the house of David, that's who we are. This land, there's no end. Okay, to anything that they need. Their land is full of horses. The land is full of silver and gold. The land is full of all kinds of treasure. If all the nations in the world today, America, the nation in which are the headquarters of the church, is the richest, especially so at this particular time, in the time in which this truth is unfolding. Moreover, no other nation has as many church leaders, that's horses, and as many church sheriffs. No other nation in the world has for every one of its citizens room and its sheriff. These are the designating marks which the Yeshua employed for the pointing out the land and the people unto whom he is speaking. Isaiah 2:8-10. For their land also is full of the idols. The land of Israel, that's who he's speaking to, is also full of idols. For they worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made, and the mean and man boweth. He boweth down, and the great man humbleth himself. Therefore forgive them not, enter into the rock, and hide thee in the dust, in the fear of the Yeshua, and for the glory of his majesty. For the nations referred to evidently brags much about her achievements. For the great and small are all alike in this respect, says the inspiration. True, there is nothing wrong in the progress, but progress should never become our God. Even eventually all will come unto the end of their idolatry. For when the Yeshua manifests his power, that will leave, they will leave their idols and run for the rocks of the mountains. So if you're performing any kind of idolatry, I'm saying starting with myself, I'm examining my own soul every day, and I'm asking for the deliverance from all signs of idolatry or sin. For the servant you eat, drink, say, or do all to the glory of Yahweh. That's in Isaiah 33:15. It says, those who now exalt themselves will have to be humbled. Okay, it says, Isaiah 2:12-19. For the day of the Yeshua of the host, that's the Son, shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty, upon every one that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low, and upon all the cedars of Lebanon that are high and lifted up, and upon all the oaks of Bashan. That's Bashan in prophecy of the United, is the Seventh-day Adventist Church first feeding pastor with Ellen G. White from 1844-1890. And upon all the high mountains, and upon all the hills that are lifted up, and upon every high tower, and upon every fenced city, and upon all the ships of Tarshish, and upon all the pleasant pitches, and the loftiness of men shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Yeshua alone shall be exalted in that day, and the idols he shall utterly abolish. He's going to utterly abolish all idolatry. Okay, and they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for the fear of the Yeshua and for the glory of his majesty when he arises to shake terribly the earth. Okay, though men are now exalting themselves even above the Yahweh, for the day is upon us in which they will see themselves as they actually are, for they will feel very small as they behold the power of a great, Isaiah 2:20-21, and that they, a man shall cast away his idols of the silver. Okay, there's all of these people that worships money. Donald Trump is one of them. And the idols of gold, all these idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship and for the mold and for the bats, to go into the cliffs of the rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks for the fear of the Yahshua and for the glory of his majesty when he arises for the shaking terribly of the earth. Those who do not now cast their idols unto the mold and unto the bats, as it were, will have to do so later. But it will then be too late to profit them. Isaiah 2:22, cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? Here is Yahweh's simple remedy for his people. They should cease listening unto the soothsayers. They should instead hear what the inspiration has to say from the prophet on a day-to-day basis. For they should study Yahweh's word for themselves with the aid of the actually inspired teachers of the Yahweh and make their own decisions. Never, never rely upon the direct decision and judgments of the others, no matter what they are or who they be. Just recently, the Trodden Down Kingdom Rising Again, we're on One Time Reading, number 29, we're on page 12, the last paragraph. Just recently, a certain sister gave her reason for the leaving one man's teachings and embracing another. Said she, so-and-so prays more and has more of the Spirit than so-and-so, and I intend to stay by him. Never again will I trust in a man. It is obvious that this sister chooses to stay by one teaching, not because of the teachings themselves, but because of the man's appeal unto her. Then her statement, never again will I trust in a man, positively proves that she does not know herself, and that she knows even less what it means to trust in a man. For we believe in the Bible writers, not for what they were, but for what they wrote. Men that are deceiving are all praying men. For the devil knows that the more they put themselves and their religion in on display, the more will the people fall for them. They have nothing else anyway, for the majority do not pay much attention to what the Bible really says, and therefore know not that the Jews who crucified the Yahshua were deceiving the common people by the much prayer or praying, where they could be seen that none of the prophets endeavored in thus selling themselves unto the people, that what they were anxious to sell unto the people was not themselves but Yahweh and his truth, that they all were very careful not to make a display of themselves. For Yahshua himself reaffirmed the same pattern. He did not pray with the Nicodemus or with the rich young ruler, but plainly told them what the truth is. There is no record that he prayed with anyone. On the contrary, though, I know a man making a prayer room in the corner of a public toilet anything to sell himself unto the people, for that is what people are looking for rather than the truth, it is because the laity are, as a rule, quick for the listening unto men that appeal unto their taste, that because of this, the enemies of the truth carefully and studiously try to pin something against the characters of those who bear the message of the hour. It says, for the adversaries well know that the laity are making their choice on the face value of the men's purported reputation rather than on the weight of the truth. For this reason, the adversaries of the truth are taking advantage of the situation, and so since they cannot refute the truth, they desperately resort to the pharisaical falsehood with which to char the characters of those with whom they disagree. We nevertheless have a good cause for the great and solemn rejoicing that we are privileged to be living in a day when out of the ancient ruins of the Judah and Israel, the 10 tribes, shall emerge a kingdom and a people that shall be exalted above all the kingdoms and nations of the earth. When the headquarters of the gospel are established in the mountain of the Yashur, then the work will be finished without the delay. To repeat, converted nations will beat their swords into the farm implements. They will turn from the waiting unto farming. After Yahweh's church passes through the purifying process, then it shall be clearly seen by all that a lost church could not save a lost world. During the second Pentecost, there's that second Pentecost again, Joel 2:23-28, every congregation member of Israel, of the spiritual Israel that has been sealed with the Spirit of the truth, will be filled with the Spirit. And as a result, thousands without the hesitancy embrace the present truth for this time. And present truth is delivered on a daily basis. That's in Matthew 24:45-47. There is no time to lose. That's in Matthew 24, actually about 41 through about 47. For there is no time to lose, for the day is upon us when men shall see themselves as they actually are. For the truth, those who do not now cast aside their idols, there's that idols out there, well, the household of Israel that we have been sent to, the antitypical Labanites, right here where we're living, they are first and foremost steeped in idolatry. We'll do no later, so later, but as we said before, it will then be too late to profit them. Now is the time for the turning from men and for the making our own decisions in the accordance with the promise that unto Yahweh's trusting and truth searching, one Yahweh will give his Spirit for the leading him into all the truth. Even though the enemies of the truth may resort unto every perfidy to harm their cause, yet truth always triumphs and Yahweh's people with it. Nothing can hurt the truth, for it is like an anvil. When the hammers of the adversaries are all worn out, the anvil will still stand. This brings the end of our study of One Time of Greetings, number is 29. We'll close now with a song.